Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the mid-20th century, African Americans left the South in great numbers, headed north, away from poverty and Jim Crow race laws, and toward the promise of jobs and civil rights to cities like Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago, and more. It was the Great Migration. Now, newly released census data is showing a marked reversal. African Americans headed back to the South, and in record numbers. Atlanta, Charlotte, Houston, they're all seeing big spikes in black population. This hour on Point, we'll look at what's going on in the Great Migration reversed. You can join the conversation. Is this your story? Have you seen this trend unfolding in your community? African Americans, all Americans, what do you see going on here? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, and you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now for a rundown on the new census data is Sudeep Reddy, economics reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Sudeep, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Great to be with you.
So first, tell us about the census reporting that's delivering these numbers to us. Is this part of the regular every 10-year report? What's going on?
This is part of the 10-year report. We've actually seen figures year by year showing some of these movements, but this is really the largest one. This is the report that gives us the count of populations, and it gives us a fairly broad demographic breakdown. And so this report, for instance, showed us what was happening with the huge growth of the Hispanic population across the country in the past decade, and that's something that's going to define the next half century when it comes to population growth. But we've also seen changes in existing populations here that have been remarkable, like this one that you mentioned with the unwinding of the Great Migration.
Huge Hispanic population growth and a very big shift in population, or notable in any case, among African Americans. And we're reading here the headline that the percentage of African Americans who now live in the South as high as it's been since 1960, a very different time, a very different date, 57% of African Americans now in the South, Sudeep. That represents a real turnaround from the Great Migration trend that everybody associates geographically with this population of Americans.
Exactly, Tom. And if you look back about a century ago when the Great Migration started, you actually had about 90% of the African-American population in the South, and that just declined for a variety of factors throughout the century. And as you were to go into the 60s and 70s, it fell to about 53%, and it's actually been rising slowly but steadily since then. And one of the reasons so many blacks from the South moved north was to find opportunity in the industrial cities, whether it was the East Coast cities in the Midwest. And now we're actually seeing this movement toward economic opportunity in the South, because you're seeing overall in the country this general population shift toward the South and the Southwest. And particularly for African Americans, you're seeing a move out of urban areas and into more affluent suburban areas as the population seeks opportunity. Younger population, a more educated population, is seeking opportunity in the South now.
So in the most fundamental way, this is just part of the national story of the growth of the South. But, of course, history being what it is, it has particular resonance in this case. And it's not just growth in the South. That means on the other side of the equation, you've got declines in African-American populations in some of the northern areas with the biggest black populations. Just 10, 11 years ago in 2000, five counties with the largest black populations in 2000 were Cook County in Illinois, Los Angeles County, Wayne County in Michigan, Kings County in New York, Philadelphia. They all lost black population in the last decades. Among the 25 counties with the biggest increase in black population, three-quarters in the South, Sudeep.
Exactly. And if you were to look for where you're finding better opportunities, more economic opportunities, you're less likely to find that in Detroit or in Chicago, and you're more likely to find it in Atlanta or any of the fast-growing cities in North Carolina. And so if you look at metro areas, the New York area still has the largest black population in the country among metro areas, but now Atlanta in the past decade has replaced Chicago as number two. And as you noted, Illinois and Michigan both saw a decline in their black populations. And New York City, just the city, actually saw its black population decline for the first time since 1860. And that's something that you're seeing in a number of urban areas. The District of Columbia is actually also experiencing that, people moving into suburban areas where there's more opportunity, whether economically or for a better lifestyle.
I'm reading now that more than a million black residents of the South today were born in the Northeast. That's a tenfold increase over that number since 1970. What about, is there a profile to African Americans who are headed south? Sudeep, is it young, old? I mean, are people retiring there or going in the heart of their life? Is it, you know, highly credentialed, less credentialed? Do you have a feeling for that?
It tends to be people who are younger, people who are looking for economic opportunity, people who, in many cases, tend to be college-educated, whether bachelor's degree or above, and are finding the opportunities in places like Atlanta and Houston. And the entire population is actually moving in that direction. And so you have this movement out of the older industrial areas, Youngstown, Ohio, Detroit, places where people might have moved in the past to find opportunity, and really just spreading out to other parts of the country. And so along the same lines, you're seeing a drop in black-white segregation as this is occurring among the 100 largest metro areas. 92 actually showed segregation declines over the past decade.
And is that true in the South as well as nationally, Sudeep?
That's actually the decline is the largest declines are occurring in the South and the West because you're seeing people, so many people move there, and there's less interest than you had before in staying among your own people from your own background. And so you're seeing this movement toward integration, and this is a really slow but steady movement, something that it's probably subtle under the surface, but people are seeing as you move past some of the worst history of move past the worst experiences of racism, and you move into this next century, you're seeing people kind of put that behind and move into communities where you're far more integrated and diverse than you were before.
We're talking about a fascinating trend, a reversal of the great migration of African Americans in the mid-20th century. The new census figures are making very plain, as you say, Sudeep, it's been going on for a while, but now we're really staring in the face, and it's quite fascinating. Sudeep Reddy with The Wall Street Journal, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Joining me now in the studio is Isabel Wilkerson, Pulitzer Prize-winning former Chicago bureau chief for The New York Times. Her celebrated book, The Warmth of Other Suns, The Epic Story of America's Great Migration, won the 2010 National Book Critics Circle Award. She's now a professor of journalism and director of narrative nonfiction at Boston University. Isabella Wilkerson, it is tremendous to have you with us today. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So we're all looking at these headlines, and I know you followed this, you know, forever and a day, so it may not be news to you. But for a lot of Americans, the story that you tell in your book, The Warmth of Other Suns, is the overwhelming story of African-American large-scale movement in this country, and it still sticks in our minds as from the Old South to the New North back in the mid-20th century, and here we go, turning the other way. What do you see going on here?
Well, what I see going on is, in some ways, it just shows you how far we've come as a country. It truly does. Because within a fairly short period of time, we're talking 40, 50 years, we've gone from a period of time in which people felt they had to flee their ancestral homeland, the South, for places north and west in order to be able to live out the American dream. And what happens is that each generation has its own version of the American dream. And these are the children and the grandchildren of people who had to flee, sometimes for their lives and for their families, in order to find stability and a chance to be free in their own country. Now the children and the grandchildren are returning. They feel safe enough to return to the ancestral homeland, partly because of all the changes that were wrought in the South as a result of this depopulation of African Americans that happened during the 20th century. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, this is the second wave of this searching for a better place for themselves. And I view this as truly a maturation. It's in some ways a mainstreaming of people who've been marginalized for so long in our history, finally moving into the places that their parents could not have dreamed of.
They fled danger in many cases in the Great Migration in the mid-20th century. But of course, they also fled to opportunity. Those big automobile plants and steel factories and everything else in the North. Now, there is very famously in the South, there's been tremendous growth in economic activity there. Do you see this as primarily the magnet of economic opportunity sending African Americans back to the South? Or is it something more than that? Is it the call of the old, you know, the old terrain? Is it old cultural affinity, despite all the rough history, somehow also calling people home in a way?
I think that it's a combination of things, because these are people who grew up in what are now industrial deteriorating places. I mean, we've seen what's happened in Detroit. We've seen what's happened in so many of these cities. So in some ways, what is there for people who really want to live out the American dream? They have education now. They want their children to have anything that any other American child might have. Mm-hmm. Those opportunities are now in other places, and they happen to be in the same places where their parents had left. In some ways, it's also the call of the ancestral homeland. In some ways, many African Americans, you know, the majority of whom in the North and the West are children of this great migration, mm-hmm. are in some ways Southerners at heart. In other words, they were raised in the North by parents who were Southern, mm-hmm. often, or grandparents mm-hmm. who were Southern.
So the culture had been carried north with them.
The culture carried north with mm-hmm. them, and mm-hmm. they're returning to that same culture. There are lots of reunions going on right now, if you can imagine. Reunions with second cousins that people didn't know, a return to the land that they had not really seen but had heard of from afar. There's a cultural connection that's going on as well as the economic imperative, so that like other Americans, they have every reason to seek out the other places, but they also have a personal reason as well.
I know you just flew north from Atlanta this morning. I want to really dig into this. This is absolutely fascinating stuff. A great maturation, perhaps, as you say. Isabel Wilkerson, author of The Warmth of Other Suns, is with us. We're talking about African Americans moving South to the highest percentage since the middle of the 20th century. You can join us this hour. Is this you, your family, African American and back in the South? Why? What's drawn you and how's it going? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about African Americans moving South. The percentage of Black Americans in the South now back to its highest point in half a century. We're looking at the new migration, exactly what's happening and why. You can join the conversation this hour. 57% of African Americans now live in the South. It hasn't been that high in nearly half a century. Would you have guessed 40, 50 years ago that so many African Americans would turn around and go back South? Does it just make sense when so many jobs have gone South? Or is it more than that, a kind of regional affinity, a kind of homecoming? African-American listeners, all listeners, what do you make of this interesting trend? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I've been joined by Isabel Wilkerson, author of The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's Great Migration, a big celebrated book, and of course it was about the migration the other way to the North. We'll be joined in just a moment from Atlanta by David Wall Rice. We have so many callers. Let me get to a couple. Nicole in Boston. Nicole, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you know?
So I'm an African American and I'm from Houston originally.
Okay.
And I live in Boston now.
All right.
Quite curious to know what sorts of jobs in particular, what areas and what industries are drawing Southerners, I guess, back to the South?
Or Northerners back to the South. You're a counter trend in these census figures, Nicole, coming from Houston North, more going the other way. Well, let's go to Atlanta and get an answer to that, maybe. What kind of jobs may be drawing people there? Nicole, stand by for just a second. Let me introduce David Wall Rice. He's professor of psychology and director of the Identity Orchestration Research Lab at Morehouse College. Studies how culture and politics affect self-identity. And he joins us now from Atlanta. David Wall Rice, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom. I appreciate being here.
And I don't know if you've met Isabel Wilkerson, but let me introduce the two of you. Isabel's with me in the studio here, David.
Isabel, it's a pleasure to see you also, to hear you, rather.
Good to meet you.
You hear Nicole there, African-American. She went from Houston to Boston. Now she's looking south, looking at this new migration, this new southern migration of African-Americans. She's wondering about the kinds of opportunities that may be taking people south. What do you say to her, David?
Well, I say that, you know, the things that brought me here, I can certainly speak of my own experience, were issues that deal with education. So, you know.
So you're a north-south migrator too, David.
I am. Okay. I was south, north, south, okay. north, and then back to south.
All right.
So I most recently came from New York City mm-hmm. Down here to Atlanta to take on a job as professor of psychology at Morehouse, which actually was also my alma mater. So certainly you see that there are education opportunities here with Georgia Tech as well as Emory University and the Atlanta University Center, which of course has Spelman College, Morehouse
sure.
College, as well as Clark Atlanta. But there are also, of course, technology jobs. You know, those kind of avail themselves to individuals irrespective of spaces. So you have a little bit more latitude as to where it is that you're able to kind of set up shop, as well as there's an entertainment hub here. So, of course, there's a lot of music, and we see that the film and television industry is actually growing in Atlanta. As well. I think that the interesting thing that both Sadiq and Isabella help us to recognize is that the narrative of black Americans in this country is very much the narrative of America in total. So you recognize that, you know, a lot of the reasons that would bring black Americans from the north back to southern spaces would be, you know, simply cost of living, community, spaces, and job opportunities. So that's what everybody wants. That's right, the American dream.
I've got a comment here online from a listener who calls him or himself Truth Now, and it may lay it out for you, Nicole. He says, as a 29-year-old educated black male, I moved to the South Atlanta 5 years ago because of the cost of living. He says, I think most people want to live the American dream, and at the time, he was 24 years old, Atlanta was the place I could move to and do just that. I was able to buy a home at 24, chew on that, and in the 5 years, save a substantial amount. I mean, Isabel, in many senses, I guess simple as that. Cost of living is lower, and there's the economy. Of course, the whole economy has taken a hit, but over the last 10 years, that growth in the South has continued.
Well, one of the realities is that as the people who are the children of the original Great Migration, it just so happens that they were born into the places that their parents and grandparents really had no choice but to go to. And they found themselves, the places that their parents and grandparents went happened to be the most expensive places in the country. They happened to be New York City, mm-hmm. Chicago, mm-hmm. Boston, Los Angeles.
Unless you were trapped in the urban, I mean, still expensive in the difficult urban centers.
Even expensive
But you
there.
May be trapped right there.
Maybe. Be trapped there. And so now the children who do have options mm-hmm. other than what their parents had, they're not bound by the same restrictions that their parents and grandparents may have been limited to. Their parents were fleeing a caste system known as Jim Crow, mm-hmm. looking for opportunities. Now that has been so widely addressed that the South is now a more welcoming place to all Americans, not just African Americans. And so the children are returning because they want to be able to have what everyone else has. They have more acreage, they have more land, they have freer open spaces. They can afford to send their children to the best schools. They're also having the opportunity to move into integrated, diverse neighborhoods, neighborhoods that they might not have been able to so easily done in the North, oddly enough. That's one of the surprising things about all of this.
Maybe it shouldn't be surprising at this point, but when you just look back against the big sweep of history, David Walrice, what about that? There is 90% of African Americans lived in the South a century ago, and many had been there for generations. Hard circumstances, but for a long time, that builds cultural affinity, even though it was hard. And now there's maybe some draw in that, back to cousins and back to sure. family history. On the other hand, there was infamously the North has its own version, but there was the Southern history of racism. What about that? Isabel says that old kind of semi-apartheid structure pretty much gone away now for African-Americans who moving back south. I remember a time when I had African-American friends from New York. This is a while back now. They didn't even want to drive south, let alone sure. move back and live there. Is that sure. problem really gone?
Well, I don't know that it's gone, but it definitely is able to be tolerated differently. We all know that there is still institutional, cultural, and individual racism, but the way that you are able to negotiate that individual racism allows you some agency, so you can decide if you are going to live within these neighborhoods that are more integrated. However, you recognize that in Atlanta, the large amount and large number of a population of African Americans who are here actually are in suburbs that are further stratified by class areas, and that tend to be still segregated in large part. But of course, you have community spaces. You have, you know, the metropolitan area of Atlanta where you can have a nice, healthy cross-section of individuals who are able to collaborate and intersect with one another.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it would be – I think it's very important to recognize that racism is not gone, right? So this isn't an issue that is, it's been totally erased, but it's something that can be negotiated differently on an individual level.
It's interesting here. I've got a web comment from Steve. He said, what's the big surprise? There's been white migration to the South for years. Same things, you know, to escape weather, job loss, high real estate prices. It should be no surprise that blacks would move South as well. And then he writes, Steve writes, as a Southerner, I much prefer having blacks return home than outsiders move in and try to take over. It sounds like a white Southerner welcoming this reverse wave back to the South, Isabel.
Well, again, these people were they're raised in the North, but they are essentially a Southern cultured people. In mm-hmm. other words, they are Southerners once removed, as I've been described as the daughter of a mother from Georgia and a father from Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And so the culture is one that they are not that far removed from the Southern families that were part of this great migration. And that means that they are in some ways returning home. It is a homecoming for many people.
Let's go to Jay in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Jay, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, I really am enjoying the show.
Great.
For me, it wasn't as an African American, I migrated from New Jersey to Virginia area, Virginia Beach.
Okay.
And it wasn't so much about the economy. At the time, I took a pay cut, significant pay cut. But it was about quality of life. One thing I realized about New Jersey in a northern area, it was a very, very, very racist area. In comparison to my business down here in Virginia, the people were polite. When I got pulled over by the police in Virginia while I might have been speeding,
okay,
they were so polite. I had to say thank you, officer, as opposed to New Jersey, get out the car, spread your wings, all these different gyrations and motions where you felt like the world got twisted on its ear. All the things the South was accused of, the North had become.
Wow, you're spinning our heads here, Jay. How long have you been back been down in Virginia now, Jay?
15 years and loving it. Wouldn't
okay.
go back to New Jersey except for the food. It would save my life.
Wow, 15 years. You've got creds here. You've got cred. That's real time. I mean, David, I don't know. I mean, you can get a hard time from police if you're African American in this country, I suppose, in any part of the country. But, Jay, you know, 15 years. And, you know, there's no way he'd go back except for a meal now and then.
Sure, sure. And I understand that. I mean, certainly there is a Southern hospitality that really does exist. I actually was born in D.C., grew up in Texas, and did a lot of my education in the Northeast Corridor. And so I certainly can recognize the distinctiveness in terms of how it is that individuals are engaged. And I appreciate and respect that. And, you know, one of the things that I like about living in Atlanta is that, again, you have a choice of where and how it is that you want to live. And you can be around, you know, folks who look like you, or you can be around folks who are integrated in integrated spaces. And I think that's really healthy. And I think that, you know, as the country matures and as we do see these important markers as indicated by the census, as explained and explicated in Isabella's mm-hmm. book, we're very appreciative and fortunate to look at how this learning curve for America has progressed. The thing is, and I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer or anything like that, is that we still have to recognize that there are issues that have to be negotiated by black Americans and white Americans and other racial entities as well, that hasn't been ameliorated yet. However, I think that, you know, the fact that we have these spaces, we have these points of dialogue become very important in terms of, you know, progressing ourselves and maturing a nation.
Let me ask you, Isabel Wilkerson, I've got a web comment here from Jack up in Rutland, Vermont. He loves your book. He said, it is fine. He says, two questions for you, Jack writes. First, to what extent is the lingering old culture of the South, parentheses, without the lynchings, of course, an attraction for African Americans, the lingering old culture? And also, are there differences in attitudes, he asks, of blacks toward northern and southern whites that figure into this reverse migration?
The attitude of Southern...
Of blacks toward Northern and Southern whites. I'm not sure.
I'm not clear on that.
But it's, they're both, they're related. Is there something, if you can subtract the, you know, the really bad and nasty parts of racism that were there. Is there something about the old culture of the South that's actually a positive allure, and even something in the interaction of white and black in the South that may be part of that allure?
There's something familiar for any African-American who was raised in the North and is originally from that migration stream, that once they return there, they will recognize. There are aspects of the language, there are aspects of the food, there are aspects of the music, there are aspects of way people communicate that would be familiar to anyone returning, which is why there's a draw that goes beyond just the economics. I'd also say that when it comes to the country as a whole, one of the things that occurred as a result of the seismic shift of this dispersal of African Americans occurred during the 20th century, during the Great Migration, mm-hmm. is that what it did is it helped to bring the South into the mainstream, so that the South changed dramatically, but it also forced the North to deal with something that the North had not had to deal with mm-hmm. before, and that was the issues of
diversity.
Race, the
mm-hmm.
actual diversity which mm-hmm. the North had been removed from. Mm-hmm. And so that made actually the entire country more alike. So while I say that the caste system that ruled, meaning Jim Crow, mm-hmm. the hard and fast rules and laws that wouldn't allow people to even play checkers together of different mm-hmm. races, while those things are gone, it doesn't mean that all is well. It just means that the country is more alike than it is different from previous generations. And that means that African Americans are now free to make a decision based on what is best for them, not on the basis of rules or laws or a caste system that may be in one place mm-hmm. and not so obvious in another. And that's part of the maturation I'm speaking of.
I'm talking with Isabel Wilkerson and David Wall Rice about the reversal in the migration of African Americans before mid-20th century from South to North, now from North to South. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. David, give us a sense of the texture of that. First, at the power level, I mean, the Jim Crow laws were definitely implemented to cement a white power structure in the South. Now, you famously have many African-American mayors and the politicians of all stripes in the South. But what about the actual power structure of the place? If educated African-Americans from the North go South, are they going to be suddenly think, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm back, it's 1955 all over again? Or are they going to find real power sharing racially?
I think there is real power sharing. Of course, we know of the late, great Maynard Jackson, who was here in Atlanta mm-hmm. As mayor. And now we have Kasim Reed, mm-hmm. who actually is of a younger generation and who really does have a strong amount of power that he's able to exercise here within Atlanta. And before that, we had Shirley Franklin. So in terms of mayoral politics, you see the kind of not only immediate power that's able to be exercised, but a lot of the work that these mayors have and are doing are able to be seen nationally as well. I also think that in terms of, you know, the folks who were coming here, who were returning South with a certain amount of expertise, whether it be political or whether it be some type of economic orientation, the power that's associated with a lot of the jobs that are available here and that are being exercised here allows for a different type of look. So folks don't feel as if they're marginal. Folks feel like they're very mm-hmm. much part of what's going on within the cityscape.
And what about the cultural interaction? Isabel mm-hmm. points out there's a lot of history here. Some of it's good, some of it's bad, but it included a time when, for example, a young African-American man to look too directly in the face of a white person, just that would sure. be problematic. Is that all gone?
And, you know, I don't think
how's that work
no.
now?
No, the short answer is no, it's not all gone. But I think that it's gone to an amount that obviously is tolerable enough for folks to move back, right? So I live here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't feel any immediate fear necessarily in my everyday, but there still are some cautions. But I think that there is a maturation, as we've discussed, you know, during the time of the program here, is that there's a maturation that both white and black folk have experienced. And, you know, I think that we are more alike. And so able to look at one another as like in finding like spaces and like points of interaction, I think that, you know, there's more maturation that can take place. But, you know, again, I think that
being in Atlanta for me is a good look. I mean, I love teaching here. I love being able to use this as a hub. I'm going to New York day after tomorrow to give a couple of speeches and things like that. So the fact that you have, you know, Delta that's here and you have other, you know, of course, Air Transit,
airline,
like that,
yep.
there's
mm-hmm.
there's accessibility to go throughout the nation and throughout the country. But, you know, to go back to your initial question, you know, there is a greater sense of community, I think, between black and white folk here that wasn't here before. And I think that that allows individuals to see hope in more pronounced, healthy relationships in the future.
Boy, this is interesting, Isabel. I mean, you go back far enough in history, it's about racism and slavery. Now it's about air traffic schedules. And my, how convenient they are.
Well, I wanted to point out that a lot of things have changed beyond just the caste system that once ruled the South in such extreme ways. And that is that the South has become so much more diverse in multiple ways. Mm-hmm. We know that the South has been a great magnet for Latinos, for example.
Yes.
That is a group of people that had not been represented in the traditional southern states that we know, Georgia and Alabama.
Just plain mixing it up.
Mm-hmm. Lots of northern whites are moving there as well. Mm-hmm. It's a huge difference from half a century ago.
We have so many callers waiting to come on. I can't wait to get to them. We will do that right after a short break here. Isabel Wilkerson, author of The Warmth of Other Suns. Please stand by. And David Wall Rice joining us today from Morehouse College in Atlanta. We're talking about African Americans moving south. You can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about African Americans moving south. Really interesting trend. The percentage of black Americans in the South now back to its highest point in half a century, 57%. Of course, it was 90% a century ago, but it went way down in the so-called Great Migration in the civil rights era that saw, and before, that saw African Americans move north for opportunity for civil rights. We're looking at this new migration, exactly what's happening and why, with Isabel Wilkerson, author of The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's Great Migration, a much celebrated book that talked about the Northern push. She's now professor of journalism at Boston University. And with us from just up this morning on a flight from Atlanta, and with us from Atlanta, David Wall Rice is here. He's at Morehouse College. He studies how culture and politics affect self-identity. You can join the conversation this hour. African-American listeners, what do you make of this trend? Southerners, black and white, do you see it? And what does this new migration say about race, region, and opportunity in this country, about where we've been and where we're going? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. And let's bring in callers just off the hook here. Norfolk, Virginia. Mark is calling. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I'm enjoying the dialogue. I was just listening to Mr. Wall's comment, and certainly being he spends a lot of time, he lives in Atlanta, he can identify what I'm getting ready to say.
Okay.
One of the successes is that one we have to leave out, one can't leave out is the fact that Northerners bring back a more progressive mentality, the more can-do mentality, no glass ceiling mentality. And so when you have that migration of African-Americans that made the transition, went north, became mentally empowered, and some became financially empowered as well, and then you bring that back to pockets like Atlanta, Houston, and Charlotte, and I can tell you firsthand from visiting Atlanta and almost relocating there, it was mind-blowing to me to find neighborhoods that were million-dollar neighborhoods, and they were all black.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing to me to see a fair share, not quite dominant political culture, as Mr. Wall alluded to, but a very sound and not so uncompromising Uncle Thomas-type politician. I mean, these were people who looked out for their constituents, and they just didn't have they weren't in a box. They didn't feel that you could just put black people's potential in a box. So when you go to Atlanta, there's like a freedom from the time you get off the plane to the time that you have a black sky cap who's professionally dressed and is treating you with the utmost courtesy to going to a rent-a-car place where the actual African-American you know, can actually have the empowerment to upgrade you from maybe full to luxury based on what the atmosphere may be. Getting to the hotel, and these are all real experiences.
Yeah.
This is where I'm traveling with my family and needing other accommodations and being, you know, elevated to different floors that could accommodate my size family. Where here in Virginia, you don't see a change in that progressive mindset until you almost get to Northern Virginia. Then the mentality changes again through D.C. and Maryland, where you see African-Americans flourishing, and to the other pockets like Philadelphia, where it's more of a can-do, where a lot of southern states are still under the good old boy. So if you're an entrepreneur, if you have need access to the banks and everything, you generally can't expect a whole lot of that to happen. But in Atlanta, once again, what I noticed, I saw African-Americans building subdivisions, financing it themselves. Like here in my section of Virginia, you won't find like black franchise owner dealers of like Nissan, Hondas, and all that. But then you go to Atlanta, and you can't even begin to stop, you know, naming Hank Aaron has the BMW dealership, the Barranco Auto Group, Legacy Auto Group.
And right on you go. Mark, you are hot. You really lay it out there. It sounds like, you know, south and then more south and more south still, and it gets better. It's really interesting. David Wall Rice, what about it? I mean, Mark starts off there saying, in a way, the returning African-American population may be sort of revved up by its experience in the north. I mean, your group deals with identity orchestration.
Sure.
If your identity is established in what Mark calls a sort of progressive or can-do northern environment and then comes back south, have you got a kind of supercharged migrant there, David?
Yeah, I think that's very interesting point that Mark brings up there. And I think that it's an intersection of sensibilities. I mean, certainly you have can-do Southerners, of course. You can point easily to Martin Luther King and how it is that he, you know, led a revolution, and we can go down the line. But I think that you know, there's a tremendous point to be made in terms of sensibilities and identity establishment in northern spaces. But I also think that it's important, as Isabella points out for us, that the rooting of a lot of these individuals is Southern. So to come back here is tremendously a familiar, and so that supercharging, I think, is an intersection again of sensibilities where it might be northern bred but southern rooted. And so when you feel comfortable, it's a lot easier to be able to exercise, you know, whatever acumen you might have, you know, whether it be economic or political or psychological. There are a lot of things that you can do once you feel quote unquote freed up to do it. So I think that that's a very interesting point that was made by the caller who just spoke just then.
Is there any pushback in the South? I mean, when you came back to the South, David, did you have, I don't know, brothers down there saying, hey, man, you know, we back off. Go, you know, stay up north. These are our jobs down here. We're doing fine. Thank you.
No, nobody messes with me. No, I'm just kidding. No, I didn't have that at all, you know. And I think one of the things that was interesting is, again, I went to school here. So, you know, I went to school in Atlanta at Morehouse College. And so there was family there. And then I also have family who is in Atlanta. So, you know, it was welcoming. It was familiar. So all the things that we're talking about here, it was very much a homecoming. But then there still is the ability to be able to negotiate those northern spaces as well, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that there isn't a pronounced pushback in that way. There's more welcoming of open arms. And I think that as long as you're able to kind of leverage your expertise, your interests, and you're contributing to the culture that's down here, I mean, folks will appreciate it, I think.
Let's get a call from Nashville, Tennessee, and Leslie. Hi, Leslie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am calling as a Chicago, grew up in Chicago to the age of 18.
Okay.
Came down south to Tennessee to go to school and never left.
You are the trend, Leslie. You are the very embodiment of the trend.
My mother is a Tennessean from Nashville.
Okay.
So she's sitting there. I have 11 brothers and sisters in Chicago, and 8 of us came down south to go to college. So my parents growing up, the thought was, you go down south for the good education, because we weren't getting a good education in Chicago to my mother.
Yes.
So she sent us down south, and so I stayed, another brother stayed. So it's been an interesting journey, I'll say.
So you are part of the trend. When you look around, do you see it? Do you see other once northern African Americans who now, you know, sort of populate your I don't know, neck of the woods there, Leslie?
Yeah, and what's interesting is that a lot of Southerners want to say, oh, they're from Chicago too, and you should speak to them, and because y'all have the same kind of sensibilities or lack of or things you need to learn when you come down south. And we all say, everybody speaks to each other down here.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So it's really, I guess it's kind of fun because, you know, we all say we're never going back, better weather, all those wonderful things.
You grew up in Chicago, though.
Yes.
Did it feel like homecoming? Was there enough of the culture left to you by your mother who had grown up in Nashville that it still felt sort of like your terrain, even though it had not been where you were raised?
No, I grew to love after being here because the first 18 years were in Chicago, so I was a northern girl through
mm-hmm.
and through.
Mm-hmm.
And so coming to the south, I had to learn a different pace and even a different conversation, a different way to use words. Believe it or not, it's even a different language you need to learn. Wasn't taught to say yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, but I was mm-hmm. taught to be very clear when I say yes to adults.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my grandparents were still in Nashville, Tennessee, so I had to remember to say yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of sometimes I call it black acting school, learning how to talk in
right.
different groups.
Right,
and that's
right.
still very important down south, especially among our elders.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that. Leslie, I'm so glad to get you. You are the first-hand account, and I appreciate your call so much. One more here. Pawleys Island, South Carolina. Steve. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon, or I guess good day to all of you and your panel. I'm enjoying the conversation. I'm a transplant about 9 years ago. I'm actually a white man who came down to the South, was raised colorblind in the North,
okay.
Got here and was a little, I don't know, put aback by the separate but equal treatment that I was seeing. So I sought out a group. It's called the Palmetto Project, and it's a bunch of relocated blacks and whites who get together once a month over a covered dish, and we discuss issues relative to race in our community, what's going on, what can we do, who can we contact,
okay.
because everybody knows everybody here. It's a small-town mentality. And I was a little bit surprised when one of our regular attendees brought up the point that of all the group, of all the blacks that come to the group on a regular basis, they're all folks who went away, professionally speaking, back in the Great Northern Migration,
mm-hmm.
and then have come back to be with family, closer to family. And none of the native speakers, none of the native folks actually come to our group. And I'm just, I wish they would. We'd like to expand the group. We've got some walking history in some of this group. Some of the folks that attend our group are in their 80s and 90s, and they're the wise people as far as I'm concerned. The way I look at things, but I, you know, we still go to events where it's all white or it's all black. It hasn't totally changed. I hope it will someday because people are missing out on each other's cultures. Obviously.
Steve, you raised such an interesting question there, though, and I can just see your covered dishes lined up and everybody's sitting down. But let me put it to Isabel Wilkerson, because Steve is saying that the blacks who get together in this white-black group to talk about these issues tend to be those who have come back south from the North. Does that make sense to you,
it
Isabel?
It makes perfect sense, because one of the things about people who migrate, whether they were part of the original Great Migration or those who are returning to the South now, or even people who came from parts of Europe to the United mm-hmm. States, there's something different about them. And it takes a great deal of risk and courage, actually.
In their personality, their outlook.
Mm-hmm. Their outlook. They tend to be a little better educated, a little bit more passionate about this desire to move so far away. So they'd be more likely to embrace this new place. You can hear a lot of enthusiasm in the call. The people who've come from the North into the South.
Yeah,
this
fired
excitement
up.
Fired mm-hmm. up about learning mm-hmm. this, learning the aspects of the culture that might be a little different, rejoicing in the things that are familiar, and wanting to connect with other people. They have more of a motivation to do that than the people who stayed, because the people who stayed have always been there. And they don't have the same sense of need for that reaching out.
Do you think, I mean, you wrote so movingly in The Warmth of Other Suns about those who had gone north, Ida Mae Brandon Gladney and George Swanson and Robert Joseph Pershing Foster, the doctor. Could they have imagined this turnaround, that they would have gone through all that effort and made that great migration north, and then they're children or grandchildren might have turned around and gone right back down south.
One of the things we haven't noted here is that many of these original people who migrated from mm-hmm. the south to the north, these parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents in certain cases, actually would have preferred that their parent, that their kids stay. They actually, some of them are frightened for their kids going back. Mm-hmm. They still have frozen in time the sense of the South as it was when they left it. And a lot of them had no desire to return. So the idea of their children and grandchildren going back, I've heard many stories of people who have said that their parents have begged them not to do it, but they've done it anyway, because that is what generations must do. They have to stake out a claim for their own time, the time that they happen to be alive.
Mind-blowing for one generation,
yes.
And natural, maybe even necessary for the next. We're talking about African Americans moving south. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's get a call from New York. New Rochelle, New York. Quentin is on the line. Hi, Quentin. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. Listen, I'm going to just make this quick and clear, concise. It's three reasons. One, I mean, I'm kudos to your guests. I'm a Morehouse graduate myself. I moved to Atlanta in 1998. I left in 2004.
Okay.
I had about $75,000 saved up when I moved back to New York from Atlanta.
Good you.
I was 24 years old. Now I'm broke. I'm 30 years old now, and I'm planning on moving back to Atlanta at the end of the year. Number one is jobs. Number two is quality of life. And number three is dignity. Here in New York, I don't want to say conspiracy, but here in New York, there's so much gentrification going on that blacks are pretty much being pushed out. And that has a lot to do. And it's not only here in New York. It's in other cities like Philadelphia. It's going on in Boston. You know, all the major cities in the Northeast, they're pushing blacks out. Secondly, there's been a huge Latino migration into the country, which I have no problems with. But the thing is that, Latinos, here in New York, there's more Latino-owned businesses than black-owned businesses, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like Latinos don't hire blacks. And, you know, like I said, we're just being pushed out. And the quality of life issue, I mean, like the caller said earlier, I think it was a web comment, that the guy moved down to Atlanta at 24, bought a house, and now has a whole bunch of money saved up in the bank. I mean, you can't do things like that here in New York unless you have a very, very, very solid support system, which a lot of people just don't have.
Quentin, you are keen and you're on top of it. And if you make that move, I hope it works out very well for you. David Wall Rice in Atlanta. You know, there's Quentin's list: jobs, quality of life, dignity, which is interesting, going back south, and then, you know, feeling sort of pushed out by gentrification in the North. I don't know if that happens in the South, too. And then this interesting dynamic of Latino immigration in the North and the South kind of as a huge new factor in Americans' lives, including his, David.
Sure. I think that, you know, I think those are great comments. And, you know, we said from top that conventional wisdom suggests that there's cost of living, community, and space here, you know, in the South. And so that's something that everybody wants. You want room to live, quite frankly. And the way that you want to live is you want to live in a space that's dignified. And you also want to live in spaces where you see folks who look like you who are doing positive things. And that certainly is something that you see in the South. Now, you can see that in the North as well, but those other two ticks might not be there, right? The cost of living. Mm-hmm. I know when I'm in New York and I lived in Harlem, I felt like as soon as I walked off my doorstep, I need to give somebody $100.
Right.
You don't necessarily feel like that when you're here in Atlanta. And so I think that, you know, it is so important to look at, you know, how individuals are going to define how they're going to live. So when you're talking about dignity and when you're talking about being able to, and, you know, we heard this a couple of callers back as well, when you're able to see folks who look like you, who are helping you, that you can't beat that, right? You can't beat that. And you can't beat it in terms of how it is that you're interacting personally. But also, you know, I'm bringing up a 3-year-old. I want for him to see not only a black male president and a black female president, we hope one day, and a female president, all that kind of stuff. But you want him to feel comfortable within his skin around people who look like him and other folks who don't look like him as well, so that we have this solid community as we continue to progress and, like I said before, be a healthy nation.
This has been a great window on a new turn of events in this country. Isabel Wilkerson, our time is so short, but nothing's perfect. But this is an interesting moment to say, good for this country, a kind of maturation right here in these numbers.
It shows how far we've come, and the fact that everyone's talking about dignity means that ultimately that's at the core of all of what we're talking about.
Isabel Wilkerson and David Wall Rice, you're both terrific. Thank you so much for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.